Hey everybody, join us as we delve into our favorite dark tales and paranormal mysteries.
Venture with us beyond the safe places that exist in daylight as we go beyond the shadows.
True crime.
Paranormal.
Hauntings.
UFOs.
Cryptids and unsolved mysteries.
Conspiracy theories.
Past lives.
Reincarnation.
And all the like are just a few of the topics that we will tackle.
If it haunts your fucking dreams, then it will be on our show.
Shadows where you found me at. You can't see me in the deepest blacks. When your heart starts racing and you see the cracks, all these creepy things that you might attract. All the demons be where the action's at. So listen up if you want it. UFOs, all them ghosts, we got everything that you want. Whoa.
Do you know what the most frightening thing in the world is?
Hi, and welcome back to Beyond the Shadows, episode 77.
Welcome back, Shadow People.
So, another interesting week in the news.
Always interesting. Yep. People keep it interesting, for sure.
It's another week where there was enough stories that it takes some effort to narrow them down to the two or three creepiest fuckers out there.
For sure.
So it's a little more lighthearted to start. So we had an elephant in Butte, Montana this week. She made a break for it during her routine bath.
Yeah, I feel bad enough for the elephants being locked up in the first place. But it actually sounds like these people take pretty good care of this elephant.
They do.
But there was a truck that backfired.
Yeah.
An old elephant beat feet the hell out of there. She wasn't having it.
Yeah, she took a shot.
Yeah, she did.
Viola is her name. She escaped from the Jordan World Circus, and she actually crossed Main Street. I mean, so she got away, but she got distracted by a casino. She stopped in the casino parking lot.
Shoot some craps. Yeah.
Tasty
take
grass.
Take a crap, one of the two.
Probably both. Some tasty grass, and that's as far as she got. They ended up adding 3 years to her original sentence for the escape.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder how they let her back with peanuts. No, actually, they said that they brought a truck with another elephant on it, and they brought her to the truck. It was like her mate or her partner or whatever.
That'll do it.
And they get on and started, what are they, trumpeting or whatever. So, yeah. Actually, the people in Montana said, dude, they're used to like bison and stuff like that, so nobody went anywhere near the elephant. They knew, stay away from that shit.
Also in the other news this week, we got a woman in Brazil brought her uncle into the bank to sign some forms, which would give her a loan of about $3,300.
Yeah, she's trying to get her uncle to sign the loan.
Yeah. The only snag with her plan was her uncle was dead.
Dead as shit. We got another story of people trying to get some money off of their dead relatives.
Another Weekend at Bernie's story.
If you guys want to see this one, I'm going to post this. It's a straight-up bank video of her bringing this guy into the bank. And we were just talking about it. We were reading the article, and it said that one of the tellers said that they could tell because rigor mortis had set in.
Yep.
No, this dude is fucking straight-up dead. He's like a floppy cock in that chair, dude, just flopping all over the place. His head, she like lifts his head up, and it just drops it backwards. She's trying to put the pen in his hand like he's going to take it.
Twice. Yeah. Took the pen in his hand and tried to use his hand to try to sign it twice. So the clerk actually says, I don't think he's well. He doesn't look well at all. Another employee comments on his pale complexion. And she responds, oh, that's just what he's like.
This is what Unc looks like.
He always looks dead.
Yeah.
So she once again put the pen in his hand and tried to sign it. They ended up contacting the authorities. Erica De Souza Vieira was arrested for violating a corpse as well as attempted theft through fraud. Nope. So the police said he had been dead for hours.
Yeah, but she insisted that he was alive when they got there.
Yeah, that's what her lawyer said. Her lawyer said, this is a quote, the facts did not occur as has been narrated. Paulo was alive when he arrived at the bank.
Paulo was not alive.
So, all right, if that's true, so he passes while she's in the bank. Rather than calling paramedics, she's like, well, fuck it, we're already here. Let's just sign these forms.
We need to get this signed and fast.
I'll just go ahead and use his hand.
Old Unc ain't looking so hot. We need to wrap this shit up.
He can hold on for two or three more minutes. I'll use his hand. We'll sign the forms. We'll knock out two birds with one stone.
Is an X okay? Can you just put an X here?
Come on, man. Yeah. She knew damn well he was dead.
Oh, for sure. There's no way she couldn't have.
Last story. 17-year-old student in Baldwinsville, New York, apparently decided he had enough of the school principal. So he faxed in some paperwork submitting the principal's resignation.
This is great.
That's definitely something I could have seen one of us doing back
then. Oh, yeah. And he faxed it in. That's perfect.
He did, because that's what somebody older would have done.
Exactly.
Unfortunately for him, he put his own phone number on the cover sheet of the fax.
So yeah. That's how he got caught. He got busted. Yeah, that principal's like, no, sorry, man. You gave your resignation. Right. You're done.
Well, when I was in school, when you got in trouble, they didn't usually call. They would send letters home.
Uh-huh.
That's generally how they contacted the parents when you got in trouble, which I did, you know, a fair amount. So most of my friends would know, you beat your mom to the mailbox, no big deal. Well, my mother was the fucking postmaster.
Yes,
the mail didn't come to my house. She would take it from the post office. And I kept getting caught for shit, so I had to make a phone call and change the address. So my family's mailing address became one of my friends' mailing address. You got to get creative.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Or not get in trouble.
No, that was
neither one of us pulled that off at all.
I used to show up continuously late, like always late. And if you were within
guys, he still does.
If you were within like an hour or whatever, you just had to go to the attendance office and submit a signed paper or whatever. Uh-huh. After that, it was like an immediate office detention. So, the girl I dated in high school had identical handwriting to my mother. It was flawless. But she didn't spell all that well.
So spell your mom's name wrong?
I was in the line once in the attendance office. I'm already in the office. And she's writing out the note for me, like right beside me, hands it to me like right before it's my turn. And I look over, I'm like, that's not going to work. You got to do that again. And she's like, why? I'm like, because my mother wouldn't spell her own name wrong. So she writes it again in the notebook. And then finally, I'm up front. It's my turn. I have to rip the note out of the spiral notebook in front of me. Because I just got it.
Fresh off the press. Yeah.
My mother's worried I'd lose it, so she sent the whole fucking notebook.
The whole notebook.
It worked, but...
Why'd your mom test write her own name 6 times?
She spells her name wrong all the time.
Mom's losing it.
Mom, if you're listening, the statute of limitations is up on that one. Yeah. You got nothing.
Not a chance she's listening.
No, there isn't.
She does love your broadcast, though.
She stopped on episode 2.
With my mom.
Anyway, that's the news. What do you got going on for us this week?
We are
going
to do a couple stories on some heist. We're going to do the gank the bank.
Nice. Have like a good scam.
All right.
A lot of times I find myself cheering for them.
Hey, you just talked about a scam. You're usually part of one.
Thanks for listening, guys. We'll be right back.
Do you know what the most frightening thing in the world is?
All right. Our first story. September 13th, 1997. Downtown Los Angeles is quiet. Just an average night shift at Dunbar Armory. Unbeknownst to everybody working there, they're about to become victims to one of the largest cash robberies in U.S. history. Alan Pace, the regional safety inspector for Dunbar Armory, Inc., Alan's good at his job, and he's well-liked by his co-workers. What they don't know is Alan's been casing the joint from the jump. He has big plans to rob the place. The facility is where armored trucks drop off and pick up cash that comes from all businesses around the city. And this is fucking Los Angeles, you know?
Inside jobs, man.
In the dark forest lies a secret, told in broken stories by those who have bore witness, a monster, a murder, a long-forgotten homestead. I'm on the search for the ghosts who haunt these places, and I want you to come along. Welcome to Tales, Trails, and Taverns. Here I take an active approach to finding places that people might warn you not to go to. Haunted trails, abandoned towns, old taverns where you might catch a glimpse of a long-deceased patron. Look, you're probably not going to find me trekking through Arizona looking to have a run-in with a skinwalker, and you certainly won't catch me playing with a Ouija board, but I have spent at least the last 10 years seeking out creepy, haunted, and abandoned places to explore. So lace up your boots, grab a working flashlight, and join me as I tell the tales, hike the trails, and grab a cold pint at the local tavern. You can find the podcast on Apple, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. You can find show updates on Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Facebook, and YouTube. And also check out the blog at TalesTrailsAndTaverns.com. And now, I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
So they get all the cash from businesses, banks, ATMs, all that stuff comes here. If it deals in cash, it comes through here. Alan knows he can't do it alone, so he has to assemble a crew. The crew has to be people that he'll trust, so he gets his old friends he's had since he was a child. Eugene Hill, Eric Boyd, Freddie McCreary, Terry Brown, Thomas Johnson, all to help pull off the crime. Alan goes out of his way to learn the schedule of the entire night crew. He goes through the entire facility, taking pictures of every inch. This doesn't raise any suspicions with anybody because it's Alan's job. He's a safety guy. So for him to be going through taking pictures and stuff, if it was anybody else, it'd be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Perfect gig for that guy.
Though. Yeah. So it's Alan's job for the safety of the whole facility. So it's assumed that what he's doing is just basically due diligence. So you can't see him checking out all the cameras, looking for blind spots, but really he's learning every inch, every bit where they can avoid being seen coming in.
So it is due diligence. It's just not. It is. It's not for the reason.
Yep. He was very meticulous in planning the heist. So the thing about Alan is, like I said, he's well liked, but he's also known as being a prankster. He likes to play pranks and jokes on a lot of the other people in the facility. So, but anyways, for several months, Alan and his friends, they meet regularly and they plan the robbery. He's got maps, images, detailed information. They even went on reconnaissance missions past the building. And September 12th, Alan hears through the grapevine he's going to be getting fired for a prank he pulled where he removed one of the headlights from the armored truck. So shit's about to go bad for him. He knows the time's running out and he has to execute his plan and he has to do it now. So Friday morning is the perfect time, as far as Alan's concerned anyways, because he knows on a Friday that bank is going to be full of cash. You know, they're going to take all that money will be there so they can take it out to the ATMs, to the banks, to all these places, because it's Friday. People are going out this weekend.
Yeah.
So that Friday night, the guys all go to a local party for a few hours just to establish an alibi. And then they all slip out of the party one by one. And they meet up and make the 25-mile trip to Los Angeles. It's nighttime, so traffic's good. Can you imagine if it wasn't nighttime? A 25-mile trip into Los Angeles would take you 3.5 days.
Roughly. But
at nighttime, they get in there like a half an hour. Sometime around midnight, they pull into the facility with a rented U-Haul truck. But Alan knew that the night guard, he kept his camera pointed at his own truck. So the guy who was running the cameras literally had a new truck. And he kept the camera focused on his own truck to make sure nothing happened to it. Alan knew this, and he used it to his advantage.
So the guy's doing his due diligence, too. Just yeah. Again, the wrong shit.
He's like, I'm here. I got to sit this shitty place and make sure. No, it's Los Angeles. You know people were gonna gank that truck in a second. It's nice. Yeah.
For sure.
So Alan's still got keys because he works at the facility still. He hasn't been let go yet. So he unlocks a side door, and they all walk right in. They all follow Alan's lead, sneaking by the security cameras by hugging up against the wall and moving right at the right moment. Cameras don't pick up anything. They go to the cafeteria where they quickly take the staff hostage. It's around 12:30 a.m. Most of the guards are going to lunch for a lunch break. As they show up to the cafeteria, the robbers take them hostage one at a time. As they walk in, it's a trap. They take the guards, they lay each one of them face down, tape their arms and ankles with duct tape, and then after they've got them all down, they got the key to the vault room. They snatch that from one of the guards. The vault room has cameras in it, that they can't avoid. They're just basically straight at the door. So they end up having to rush the two guards that are inside. And they got them, took them hostage just like the rest, taped them up. See, the only thing between them now and the cache is a vault, which has an 18-inch thick steel door. But the door is left wide open because of the volume of money going in and out at this time of night on a Friday night. That's the thing. These places have these huge vaults, but a lot of times they're left wide open.
Defeats the purpose of yep. a fucking vault.
But I mean, you think if they had this money in the vault, the amount of people going in and out, bringing that cash to the places, it's not feasible. You know, it's not feasible to lock that door, unlock it every time they got to get something, lock it back up. You know, that shit ain't going to work.
If you're a criminal, though, you know that. And again,
if you work
the
there,
purpose of having a fucking vault.
Exactly.
The door's open, it is
so, I mean,
vault.
I guess when it's closed, but a place like this, I don't know if they're ever closed. There's always someone there.
Yeah.
So that door is left wide open, like I said, because of the volume of money going in and out on a Friday night. So they easily enter the vault, and then they use bolt cutters that they brought with them to cut the padlocks off the cages holding the bags of money. The cash is there sorted out for different routes. Alan has memorized which routes use large bills, and those ones have bags of new cash. A lot of it's like brand new cash, which has got the serial number sequenced on it. So these are easy to track.
Yeah.
So they went for the stacks filled with $20 bills. You know, the ones that they were bringing for the bank teller machines, the ATMs. They placed the bags on a metal cart and wheeled them to the U-Haul truck and loaded it up. The U-Haul truck was parked out in the loading dock. No cameras on it. Dude's watching his truck. So they just take all the bags of cash and load them in. All said and done, it took 30 minutes. They moved $18.9 million in cash.
Fuck.
Then Alan steals the security tapes from the recording system and security tapes from the control room. Then Alan does something that only Alan would know. Alan grabs the tapes from a locked closet in the facility to get the secret backup security tapes. So all the tapes that have them on it are backed up. And just like that, they're gone without a single shot being fired. They pulled off one of the largest cash heists in American history. The crew goes back to one of their apartments. They switch back into their normal clothes and return to the party to secure their alibi. Alan ends up giving each person in the crew $100,000. To be used discreetly, you know, don't go out, no big purchases or anything like
they
that.
They always do, though.
That's usually one of the biggest mistakes they make.
Goodfellas, that was their downfall.
Every time.
Guy buys like a pink Cadillac.
It comes, his wife gets a nice mink coat. Did they beat the shit out of him for that?
He kills them all.
That's right. That's such a good movie.
That's a great movie.
Those are some of my favorite movies. I love the gangster heist stuff.
That was De Niro in his prime.
Yep. So he takes and puts the rest of the cash, $18.2 million, in garbage bags, and they move them to a self-storage facility. This is not one you want to forget to pay the rent on.
Yeah, right.
You would have the bidding wars. I paid $500 for this bin.
Barry shows up and gets it for $250.
So the local police and FBI start to investigate the heist. There's a reward of $125,000 for information leading to the arrest. They are soon without any leads. There were no fingerprints, no names used. Actually, during the robbery, the thieves called each other by number. And that would never, I can't remember jack shit, dude. I would get all the numbers fucked up every time. That would never work for me. This is why I can't have a life of crime. Get away with just the left shoe. So there was no video of the crime. The only thing they knew for sure, it was an inside job. I mean, who would know that there was another backup tapes than somebody who worked there?
Probably not that many people, even amongst those that worked there. I guess you probably narrowed the field already.
Yeah, absolutely. So authorities interviewed employees at the facility. They knew it was an inside job. They just needed to know who. So one of the questions asked during the interview is, which employee do you think could have committed this crime? Alan Pace's name came up a lot. So, I mean, they liked him, but they also knew this guy could be shady. The only clue they had was a small plastic taillight lens that they found at the scene. So out in the loading dock, they found a broken taillight, this little red piece. It's amazing they can pick up this little red piece of plastic. And the FBI determines that it's from a 14-foot U-Haul truck.
Jesus, from a piece of plastic.
Yeah, you know, they can do that, but not much else. The only name they have is Alan. So they check to see if Alan has rented out a truck during the time of the robbery, and he hasn't. The FBI begins to watch Alan, but they find nothing. Alan's living at home at his mom's house. He hasn't made any purchases. He hasn't really done anything. 6 months go by. Alan begins to hand out money to his crew. He wanted to invest his money into rental property, and he just wanted to retire and live off of that. His crew slowly begins to buy stuff. They start to buy cars and property with the cash. They end up acquiring at least 10 homes from public auction. So what they're doing is they're buying foreclosures, home foreclosures at auction. They're getting them cheap, and they're renting them out to family members, friends, stuff like that, getting that money back.
Those are usually cash.
Yeah, when you buy them from auction like that, it's cash up front.
That's what I mean, though. Like, these guys wouldn't have that amount of cash. Even at auction, they still go for like 55, 70, whatever grand.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't have this cash. But so far, there's no suspicion to any of these guys. At this point, the only name they have is Alan.
Yeah. All right.
And Alan, you know, he's keeping a pretty low profile. But eventually, Alan opens a business. He opens a business called Extreme Entertainment. And this rents out party supplies. But it's really just a front for laundering the money. He puts his crew on the payroll and pays everyone big-ass salaries. Around 2 years after the bank robbers, one of the robbers, Eugene Hill, hires a real estate broker to purchase a property and gives the man a stack of cash that's wrapped in the original cash straps. Something that they pull off like this is fucking... falls apart because of one stupid move like this.
Really stupid move.
Really dumb. Instead of taking the cash apart, he leaves the straps on it from the original. So the broker's suspicious. This is just like what you said. You know, they're purchasing homes and stuff like this, and these big pile of cash that's still wadded up from, hey, where's this from? Yeah, so he calls the police who investigate, and they realize the cash is from the stolen stash that they had, the Dunbar robbery.
What a fucking clown.
Yep. So authorities dig into Eugene's finance records and also subpoenas thousands of U-Haul records and learn that Eugene there rented a 14-foot U-Haul that day before the robbery and returned it the next day. So police arrest Eugene. They find more cash in his original money wrappers still in his home. He quickly confesses and rolls on everyone. For a lesser sentence, which they always do.
Yep.
Alan and the five others are arrested and put on trial in 2001. So there's one part I left out of here is why they had this. Some of the cash they found was that sequential cash. You know, it had the numbers. They dad grabbed a few bags of that.
Yeah.
And they can't use it. They know if they use this, they're going to get busted. Well, what they decided to do is they're like, we're going to burn this shit. They bring it back to one of the guy's apartments, and they're trying to burn it in his fireplace or his home or whatever. And it's Los Angeles. I'm surprised they even had a fireplace, to be honest. But anyways, they're trying to burn this, but U.S. cash is made to not burn very easily. And they were having all kinds of problems trying to burn to get rid of this money. Imagine that's your problem. I have so much money I got to burn. But they couldn't get rid of it fast enough. So what they did is they took that cash, and they're like, we'll bring it to Vegas. We'll run it through Vegas, clean it that way. Well, they did that, but this was new money. And the new money kept jamming up inside of the machines. They're trying to feed this into the slot machines, and the money's jamming up. So then they realize they have to take it back. They have to run it through a washing machine to get the money so it's not so new and crumbled. And they do this. And a lot of this money that they, like this, they ran through Vegas or whatever casinos that they went to.
Yeah.
So they go in there and feed it through the machines, and you know, in the end, I think they said there was a couple hundred thousand that they ended up just probably losing on the tables.
My guess is Vegas has laundered a fuckload of money.
Hi, I'm Katie.
And I'm Kelly.
And if you're looking for a super fun, awesome podcast to listen to, check us out.
All things outrageously dark, scary, beautiful, and totally true.
That's all Vegas was originally made for. Absolutely. You know, it's big laundering scheme.
Sure.
So, Alan denied taking part in the robbery. He claimed he was being set up by his former friends as revenge for cheating with one of the friends' wives. So, four of the robbers on Alan's crew pled guilty and were sentenced to federal prison for terms ranging 7.5 to 10 years. And Alan was sentenced to 24 years. Authorities have accounted for about $7 million taken in the heist. Most of that, like I said, was spent on homes, cars, and other items. It was estimated that several hundred thousands were burned or gambled away in Las Vegas. Authorities believe there's still up to $10 million still hidden somewhere. And Alan's term is up. I didn't look to see if he's out yet, but it is up. This happened in 97, I think.
Is that what an offshore account, or he buried it somewhere.
Yeah, 1997, so he's been out for a few years.
He's got half a brain. It's in a sack in somebody's yard so far down they'll never find
it. How do you use it? If you're Alan, can you ever use this money?
In tiny amounts, you know. And I mean, you have to spend a couple hundred at a time.
You have to find a way to launder it.
But even so, they're always going to be looking at you.
And they're always going to be watching.
Why Scott or Alan or whoever has this money. So you probably can't.
I think the only way he could use it is if he left the country.
Left the country or grab a couple hundred at a time.
You know how hard it is to get money out of the country?
It's harder than it was.
It's very hard. Yeah. The money comes with those little strips in it. And they say if you go through the airport with more than $10,000, you're not supposed to take more than $10,000 at a time outside of the airport.
You have to declare and pay a penalty on it or tax or whatever the hell they call it.
Yeah, you're not allowed to just take cash out of more than $10,000 out of the country. So if you're going on vacation and you want to take cash with you, you can't have more than $10,000. And those little straps, they pick that up. They know. If you have more than a certain amount of cash with you, they know. So it'd be really tough getting cash out of the country that way.
I'm sure what they do is they just pay mules. Somebody, you know, I'll pay for your trip down there. You take $10,000. You take $10,000. You take $10,000. You have enough people do it.
Yeah,
I mean, it takes some effort, but
You can't trust those.
That's what
people.
That's what the cartels and shit do. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but the cartels got this one thing for you. One thing going for them. If you fuck up, they're going to kill you. Yeah. You know what I mean?
This Alan guy might have. Yeah, guy who thought it was smart to fuck with a headlight on a truck before he...
Right before you...
Before he commits a heist. What a moron.
Yeah. What an idiot, huh? And it's... I mean, he planned out a good heist. I mean,
great.
He's every
Absolutely great, but don't...
We always talk about these guys who were smart, and then they do the dumbest shit.
Really dumb shit. Yeah. You put yourself on the radar before you even...
I mean, he thought it out. He thought out that he started a front business to launder the money himself. You know, all those guys are getting paid a nice salary for doing jack shit at his little fucking party store. But and
when you go back over these cases, and there's a ton of them that involve a crew, you're always going to get caught. The bigger the crew,
the more likely you are to get caught.
One guy, one girl, whoever is going to fuck up eventually.
I saw something when I was researching these, and they said something exactly like if someone robs a bank, the amount of money they get is usually only in a couple of $1,000 range. The more people that are in the crew, the higher the take becomes. But also, the higher the take becomes, the more likely they are to get caught because of the more number of people in the crew.
The higher the take, the more federal heat you have. I mean, if you take a couple $1,000, the FBI is probably not looking at you all that tightly.
Right.
These guys took, what, $19 million or whatever it was? They're looking real fucking hard.
Yeah.
Like you said, bigger the crew. Eventually, somebody's going to get stupid. A couple months go by, like, oh, shit, we're off the radar. No, you're not.
No.
They're just playing it smart, and they're fucking eyeballing.
They're just waiting for you.
Yeah,
they're
eventually waiting for somebody's going to drop
someone's
their guard.
Someone's going to brag. You get away with something like that, someone's going to open your mouth. It's really hard not to spill a secret.
Of course it is. And if these guys took the money, you know, a year or whatever it is later, they're thinking, well, if I can't spend this money and enjoy it, then what the hell did I take it for?
Yeah.
And then they're going to start living the way they wanted to live, the way it was in their dreams, and that's exactly what the feds want.
Usually what it is though, is they end up telling somebody. They tell everybody exactly about the crime.
Have to brag.
Like they get on their podcast, and they're like, I stole a bag of left shoes. They got to brag.
By the way, mic check. Mic check. We still rolling?
You got that? So anyways, that's our first time.
So if you see a little minivan across the street, just ignore them. They're just neighbors.
8 to 10. 8 to 10 years. I'll see you guys. We'll see how the show's doing by then. All right, we're going to Argentina. Banco Rio is one of Argentina's leading financial institutions with branches throughout the country. One of its branches was in a calm, wealthy neighborhood of, let me see if I get these right, Sony Cedro. You know how good Scott is with fucking names. This happened in Argentina. This should go over well.
They'll let you know.
I already messed up two names. All right. So 2016, Banco Rio, A heist is in progress. It was a warm January day. News cameras were trained on the hostage situation. Before I go too deep into this, so in 1999 in Argentina, there was a bank robbery. And when it was going down, it was all over the news. There was news reporters there. It was everywhere on every channel.
Yep.
And the bank robbers took hostages. And so when they rob the bank, they're trying to leave. And as they're trying to leave the bank, the police open fire on the robbers who are trying to shield themselves with hostages. One of the bank robbers ends up getting killed, but they killed two hostages in the process. So shit went real bad for the police.
Yeah.
And that situation is where the idea came for this robbery. And it also explains why the cops are acting the way they are now as compared to they did then. Because all the news, that was aired. People saw that happen on the news. They saw these hostages get shot and killed by the police on the news.
So these guys are trying to use that to their advantage.
So the dude who does this saw this and he's like, well, the only thing they were missing is this one thing and they could have got away with this.
Gotcha.
So the police were going to move as carefully as possible because of this. They weren't in a rush because they thought they had the thieves trapped and surrounded. Over 100 officers had showed up and every inch of the bank was surrounded. There were snipers posted at every exit. One of the robbers inside was going by the name of Walter. See, I got that name right. He was negotiating the release of hostages with the police. The thieves let the bank security guard walk out the door unharmed. And then two more hostages were let go. Negotiations seemed to be going very well. Walter seemed to be very happy. And the other crooks were treating the hostages well. So good, actually, that they found out one of the hostages, it was their birthday. So they all sang him happy birthday. So this is a hell of a robbery going on. So somewhere around 3:30 p.m., Walter called to the police to tell them that the hostages were hungry and to send in 30 pizzas. After that call, things inside went quiet for 3 hours. They continued to try and contact Walter, but nothing. Finally, special forces decided to go in. They went in to find 23 hostages were still there, locked up on three separate floors, but the thieves were nowhere to be found. Police checked to make sure they weren't hiding amongst the hostages, which is what I would expect when I first saw this story. I mean, yeah. How many bank movies have you seen where they just disguise themselves as one of the hostages and walk out the door?
Quick Change with Bill Murray.
Yeah, I was going to say Bill Murray was the one that I think of off the top of my head. But they couldn't find them. When they entered the basement, they realized what the thieves had really been after. There were 400 safety deposit boxes in the basement. 143 of them had been cracked open. While most Argentinians at the time were pretty distrustful of the country's banking system. Because during the 2001 economic crisis in Argentina, the bank system had collapsed. It wiped out the fortunes of all those people that had their money in the bank. So whoever had their money in the bank think it was safe, they lost it all. So the Argentine people, they weren't using banks for banks. Instead, they used the banks for their safety deposit boxes. These boxes were full of cash, jewelry, and other valuables. And like I said, this branch was an exceptionally rich neighborhood. When they described this neighborhood, they said it had like a few golf courses. It had a yachting club, you know, a sailing club, and you know, shit like that. So, you know, there's some cash there.
For sure.
And the safety deposit boxes there contained some serious money. The police only found a few pieces of evidence that the thieves had left behind. There was a battery pack, a tool that the police assumed had been used to crack open the boxes, and a bunch of toy guns that the robbers had used in the heist. The robbers had left behind a note that read, this is like their little jab at them, in a neighborhood full of rich people without weapons or grudges, it's just money, not love. That was their note. So the Argentine people throughout the country had been watching this whole robbery from their televisions. You know, after that last one, they're fixated to the television. Yeah. And they saw that the thieves had pulled off the impossible. They mostly thought of the robbers as like Robin Hood, you know? They stole from the rich. They didn't harm anybody, you know? No one was hurt. But maybe they kept the cash for themselves. They didn't give the cash to the poor.
They skipped that part of the Robin Hood
story. It wasn't people didn't seem to care. The man behind the robbery of the century turned out to be Fernando Arrojo. Arrojo and the boys had all grown up together in another middle-class neighborhood, also located in the northern suburbs of Buenos Aires. Arrojo was a pretty average guy who he dabbled in growing and smoking a little bit of weed. So, I mean, he was on the wrong side of the law from time to time. But, you know, nothing major. That was about as bad as it got for him. But he was all consumed with the idea of robbing a bank. You know, he had seen what happened on that television before, and he had his ideas. So he actually had just broken up with his girlfriend. He locked himself in his apartment. He blacked out all the windows, and he got to working on an idea. He was consumed by every movie or documentary about real-life heist. So imagine Ocean 11 and all that stuff. But no, he was watching documentaries, anything he could get his hands on. So his plan was to take in any way that a robber's been caught before, any way that they messed up a heist, so he could avoid it. He spent all his time planning out the perfect heist. In 2004, he finally realized that he not only figured out a plan, but he also knew that he needed some people. He needed his friend Volster, because he was mechanically and he had some technological knowledge that he needed to help him. While Volster wasn't too keen on the idea, however, he's also pretty pissed off at the banking system. You know, his grandfather had lost everything. His grandfather had all his money in the banks when the economic downturn, they took it all. So Arrojo guaranteed Volster that no one would get hurt. You know, that was the whole thing. They wouldn't even use real weapons. They're going in there with basically toy guns.
Yeah.
So Volster, he was on board. He soon got to work on the robbery of the century. The plan was to use the storm drains under the streets that led directly out to the river. The robbers would enter one that ran right by the bank, and they'd dig a tunnel to connect the bank and the drain tunnel. Next, they needed to figure out a way how to bypass the bank's alarm system. So, this is like the other story. They decided they'd have to rob the safety deposit box in the bank basement in the daytime when the alarms weren't set. Once again, you got these fancy alarms that can stop people going in and out. They can't have them set during the day. So, again, you got a system, but it's not in play.
They're not on. They don't exist, essentially. Yep.
One problem, though, is the bank would be full of people. So the plan was to stage a fake bank robbery upstairs to cover up the real robbery going on in the basement. Then they proceeded to assemble a crew of thieves. They needed a financer and whatnot. So they teamed up with an experienced bank robber by the name of Doc and his associate, Ruben Alberto Della Torre. I think I got it right. Nicknamed Fedo. I should have just called him Fedo from the start. They were former members of the Argentinian group of bank robbers known as Super Banda. I think that means bank robbers. Super bank robbers. They also found a financier. Okay. Luis Mario Vitesanonis.
Well, that just rolled
Vitesanonis. I got it up to that point.
That has to be right.
Luis Mario Vitesanonis. Vitesanonis, yes. A former thief himself. Well, Luis, we'll go with, it had invested $100,000 into the operation. The money was for helping dig the tunnel, and they needed to find a way to get into these safety deposit boxes. So they decided to rent a safety deposit box at one of the other branch banks. So they found out the brand of the box that they were using, and then they ordered a few for themselves to find out the best way to open them. And that they actually found that a jackhammer punching through the locks was probably the quickest way. And they could actually keep the noise level pretty low with that because, you know, there's going to be people upstairs in the bank. So they built a jackhammer that could be transported in pieces to the bank. Now they needed to figure out a way to remove the heavy spoils, you know. You get all this, whatever they're planning on taking out of the safety deposit box, is going to weigh some, you know, it's going to have some weight to it. And so not so easy to move all that. So they need to get this back to the getaway car. So they decided Zodiac boats seemed like the way to go. If you don't know what a Zodiac boat, it's like one of the blow up rafts, you know, the real solid blow up rafts.
Yeah.
That, you know, they usually got a motor on the back or whatever. So that's what they're going to use to get them out. Only problem was is the water level was usually too low for the boats. You know, with all the goods in there, it would be too heavy and it sink, you know, too low in the storm drains. So to handle this issue, they decided to build a wooden dam in the storm drain over several days to let the water build up. The morning of the heist, the men met at a coffee shop. And from there, they started the heist of the century. Volstaire headed to the storm drains to make his way towards the bank through the tunnels. Another man drove the getaway car to prearranged meeting spot. You notice I said another man, left that name out. I wasn't even going to try that one. Wasn't important. The rest of the men drove another stolen car to the bank itself, and Doc headed in with Fado, waving around a toy gun that he'd stolen from his 9-year-old son. Everyone in the bank immediately dropped to the floor. A stolen car was left outside the bank purposely to make it look like a getaway car. Volstaire reached the end of the tunnel that they had dug and was waiting underneath the bank. Doc went into the basement and broke the basement wall separating the bank and the tunnel. So what they had done is they, from the storm drains, they dug a tunnel right up to the wall of the bank, you know, but left that so they wouldn't know it was there, obviously. And then so Doc comes down, he smashes through that so they can get in and out through there.
Makes sense.
Then Luis already has all the hostages isolated. He's got them all subdued. So he goes to deal with the police as Walter. It was his job to make the police believe that the robbers had been caught in a heist gone wrong. The thieves were basically staging a visibly botched bank robbery upstairs to cover up the robbery in the basement. They were on the phone with the police and even worked out a release of hostages to make the police think that they had the upper hand. So they started releasing a couple at a time, like I said before. The plan was 2 hours, get in and out, open as many safety deposits as they could in an allotted amount of time. Once time was up and the signal came from downstairs, Walter told the police that the hostages were hungry and he had them order like 30 pizzas. This was the signal.
That aspect of the robbery is brilliant. I give him credit for that.
Yeah.
They did a lot. The robbery upstairs to cover the robbery downstairs is.
Yeah, it really is. This guy did some thinking on this one. They did more, too. They had some other clever things that they did. Valuables were placed in the bags. Before leaving the basement, and I've seen this happen, and it was in a movie, too. The basement, they sprayed everything with bleach.
That's from the town.
Yep. And then they dumped bags of hair from a local barber shop everywhere.
That was also from the town. But this came up before, when was this?
This is in 2006.
So it was before the town. The town ripped them off.
Yeah. You know, the town that I lived in Nebraska, the bank there got ripped off and they copied the town. And they did the same thing with bleach everywhere and sprayed everything. And you know what? They never got caught.
Yeah.
It was actually my bank. And I never got caught. No. I ain't even going to joke about that. That was not me.
He busted out wearing two left shoes. The dude actually,
I noticed they had it on the news, and the guy had the backpack that he put the money in. It had a big Air Force symbol on it.
Really?
It was an Air Force bag, and the base was just up the road from there. So anyway, they had to have caught that, but I do remember seeing it. So they spread hair everywhere. They sprayed everything with bleach. And the men, they exited through the tunnel, but when they left, they actually cleaned up the evidence that the wall was broken, you know, all the chunks of concrete and stuff, and they pulled it back into the hole, and they slid a cabinet in front of the hole, so it wasn't just obvious that they came in through a hole in the wall.
How's the last guy out? Get out then.
I guess they pull and slide the cabinet up towards them, up towards the hole. I'm sure it wasn't perfect, but yeah. Just to hide it. Just all they want to do is buy time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So the men got into the boats and made their way down the tunnel to where the getaway vehicle was parked. Actually, when they got in the boats, there was problems with the motors. They couldn't get the motors going, but they had brought paddles. So they ended up having to paddle, I think it was a couple miles, back up to where the getaway vehicle was at. When they got to where the vehicle was at, they used a pulley system that they had rigged up. They tested it. They did all kinds of stuff. And they raised the bags up on a pulley system from the tunnel. And then they were off. Meanwhile, police still believed that they had the bank robbers surrounded. 3 hours passed, and the police hear nothing from the bank robbers. So when the officers eventually stormed the bank, the robbers were already home watching the report on their TV live. So the robbers in there, you know, when they took everything, they got a big pile of credit cards along the way. But they knew these credit cards, they'd be worthless to them, you know. It would lead right back to them. So what they did is they took the cards and they scattered the cards all over the streets, everywhere but the route that they had taken. They scattered all these credit cards throughout the town. This caused a ton of false leads for the police because every time somebody picked up one of these cards and tried to use it, it was reported stolen. They had to go chase down that lead to make sure it wasn't one of the people who were involved in the robbery. So another brilliant. Yeah. So this may have gone down as one of the greatest heists ever, but we know all their names. So what happened? Well, when Fedo brought home the money, he did tell his wife, Alicia, And that he and his friends were the ones that pulled off the bank robbery. Only problem was with this, though, is that he had a habit of frequently cheating on Alicia. So telling her this information probably wasn't a very good idea. 5 weeks later, Fedo got pulled over by the police while driving with his mistress. Apparently, Alicia told him the whole story of the heist. The men were all tried and sent to jail. Even still, the heist goes down as one of the greatest ever.
They planned that.
Greatest ever seen.
That's impressive.
Yeah, so I mean,
but again, couldn't keep the fucking mouth shut. That's why
it all came down to one person. He had to tell someone. All right, so yeah, I can understand he wants to tell his spouse. A spouse that you're regularly cheating on and pissing off, just a really bad idea.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah, a really bad idea. It always comes down to something like that.
Yeah.
You know, they pull off this amazing heist. The other dude put a shit ton of work into this.
It's probably to them, they think like the most insignificant part of what they just pulled off is telling his wife or whatever. And that was their downfall.
Yep. But they say, two can keep a secret if one's dead. Isn't that the saying? Yeah. So.
And you're starting with a crew of several people already.
Six, yep.
And then they tell however many. So, I mean, it doesn't stay six or eight or whatever it is. It grows and that's how you get fucked.
So once again, he claims that he wasn't part of the robbery. It was the amount taken was close to $20 million. And I don't believe it's all been recovered. No. So,
of course, he didn't do it.
No, and a lot of them are out. So I was just looking tonight and I found that this heist, it was just as before you came, There's a Netflix special about this heist. I haven't seen it yet.
Really?
I didn't realize that there was one until I just pulled
it. What's
that
it called?
Heist of the Century something. I'll have to get the exact name and I'll put it out there.
But, nice.
Yeah, I want to watch it. I'd like. Netflix I really like that kind shit. Of stuff.
They've
yeah.
had some good heist specials over the week, yeah. over the years.
So
those are great stories.
That's it. That's the gank to bank.
Good stories. We're gonna head over to the fire pit.
All right, guys. See you over there.
So this week's fire pit comes from Stacy. She's one of the hosts of the podcast Early on Wednesday. That's hosted by Lavender and Stacy. They put on a great show and they cover a lot of the same stuff that me and Scott do here. So definitely check them out.
Yeah, check them out for sure. And if you want your own stories played in the fire pit or read on the fire pit, however you want to do it, like we said, send them to us. They can be any kind of stories that you would tell your friends around the fire pit. Funny, scary, spooky, paranormal, not anything.
If it's interesting, we want to hear it. Just send them in.
Yes, we do. So this is Stacy, the witch with all the gifts.
Stacy, I'm one half of the gorgeous ghouls from Early on Wednesday. My amazing host, Lavender, and I did an episode about shadow people. And ever since we've done that episode, I've had two encounters in my house. The first one was from my side of the bed. If you sit straight up and look, you can see the half of my wife's bathroom counter. And here we plug in extra cell phone batteries, shavers, you know, anything that needs to be charged. So there's always a blue glow, and it's a pretty bright glow. I had a weird feeling. So I sat up in bed, and the glow wasn't there. I could not see it at all. And the darkness in that area felt and looked deeper. I didn't speak to it. I just kind of watched it. And it seemed like in a blink of an eye, it was gone. The second one, this one was a doozy. The second one was in my hallway. And it was crouched down on all fours, kind of like a panther or an animal. Like it was getting ready to spring. I don't know, for some, the same situation in our hallway, we have nightlights underneath our plug-ins. So the hallway is mostly illuminated on the ground. But that one area, and it was a good size area, was that heavy, full darkness. And I could see its outline. This one I felt was threatening, like it was on the hunt. I stepped into the doorway and remembering what some of my paranormal friends have told me, I established my dominance. I said, I am the strongest force in this home. You cannot stay. You are not welcome. And then like my mom would shoo off mean dogs or like kids getting in the yard, I said, now go on, get. And I haven't seen it since. So let's hope I don't see it again. But if we do, thank you guys so much for having me on the fire pit.
Thank you for your story, Stacy. You know, she brings up a couple points that I've seen what I guess you'd have to call shadow people.
Yeah.
And when she describes what she's saying, it's not like they're not black. it's like an absence of everything. I know what she's talking about.
That's like the one you were describing in your bedroom and that blocked out the stars are right.
Yeah.
Stars on the wall.
It isn't like when you grow up thinking of a ghost or you're seeing like a whitish, you know. I never, as a kid, I never put them as like two separate things. But I, as I get older, I kind of think they are two separate things. You know, I mean, but the shadow people, like I saw one in the hospital I worked at and it took away it like it was like a black hole almost. It was like it's blacker than black.
Yeah.
And it's like it's sucking every bit of everything out of the room. So, yeah, I know what she means, and they're terrifying. And the other thing is, do you think she's talking about, you know, they're talking about them and you manifest this stuff? We talk about this stuff all the time. Is that a worry for you?
No.
That it's going to cut? Because I wonder sometimes, you talk about this stuff, are you going to cause it to? I know a lot of people believe in you manifest this stuff.
Well, if that's the case, we're fucked.
Yeah, we're screwed. We're pretty screwed.
We've covered pretty much everything.
And we're going to places and stuff, too, which we do. We will be doing another paranormal field trip
here. If that's the case, we've opened up pretty much every possible.
I know. I think about it because there's times when I wonder, you know. But we really appreciate your story. Thank you for sending it in. You guys, if you have a story, like we said, send it in, beyondtheshadows207@gmail.com. You can write it. You can record it. You can send it however you want. Pony Express, we don't care.
If you are experiencing any scary shit, write in, and we'll connect you with Stacy because she just orders that shit out. She's gone.
The boss, they were gone, man. They didn't play around. She kicked them right out the door.
She was in the movie The Exorcist. That shit would have been over. Just come in and be like, get the fuck out of here. The devil goes, story over.
She's a badass. Yeah. I can see it.
The movie would be like 9 minutes long. Good for you, Stacy. Hopefully hopefully that shit stays gone.
Absolutely. That was a great story, though. We really appreciate it. Thank you for sending that in. Thanks for taking the time to record it for us. All right, guys, that'll do it for this episode. We will catch you in the next one.
Later, guys.